economic carrots and sticks to get China to help defuse North Korea. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. As you've been hearing, President Trump kept up his fiery warnings for North Korea, although he did hold open the door to more negotiations between Washington and Pyongyang. The president also expressed doubt to reporters that UN sanctions would be enough to end North Korea's missile threats and nuclear threats. On the economic front, Trump said he might ease off on a possible trade war with China if Beijing does more to help out here. Leon Siegel is director of the Northeast Asia Cooperative Security Project at the Social Science Research Council in New York. He testified to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee late last month about the need for formal negotiations with the North Koreans in parallel with sanctions.
The problem with U.S. policy of trying to force China to get tougher on sanctions is that if we use economic measures to pressure the Chinese, that mainly affects South Korea and Japan's trading relations with China, which is not something you want to do.
So in other words, if we escalate beyond pressuring North Korea, but in fact enact sanctions against China for not doing its part as we see it, that has collateral effects in the region.
It's very hard to shut down Chinese trade with North Korea. A lot of it's being done by ethnic Koreans on the Chinese side of the border. There are 2 million of them in Jilin province. And you shut one company down, another one pops up because there's money to be made. And the notion that sanctions will be implemented fully, never mind by China, by South Asia and Southeast Asia, all of whom conduct all kinds of trading relations that aren't overt, a lot of it financial, but nonetheless, that empowers the North Koreans' trade with Africa and other countries. So you have to understand how tricky the sanctions business is. Sanctions aren't the solution to the problem. The only potential solution is talks. And the talks have to focus initially on stopping the North Korean programs, that is to say, stopping their nuclear testing, stopping their missile testing, and stopping their fissile material production before it goes too far.
And herein is the opportunity, as you see it, for de-escalating the situation.
All this talk about war, the only way a war breaks out, it's hard to imagine. We've had deadly clashes on the Korean Peninsula. They've always been around moves by one side or the other to bolster deterrence, show they mean business. So we've had it in exercises that we've conducted. We've had it in cases where the North Koreans have tested the northern limit line in the Yellow Sea. So that's where you can have deadly clashes. The important thing to notice is even those deadly clashes have not escalated because neither side wants war. All this war talk is really beside the point. It's mostly trying to get the Chinese to take the situation seriously, and the Chinese are fully aware of that.
Leon Siegel at the Social Science Research Center in New York. The other day, he testified on North Korea's strategy for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Lee, thank you.
Thank you.
Given all this, there's growing support in Congress for more spending on military hardware to devise new ways to knock down enemy missiles. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this.
The U.S. is already spending millions on missile defense, testing missile interceptors that are boosted into the atmosphere on a rocket, then set loose to track and shoot down incoming missiles. Tom Carrico is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
By the end of 2017, we'll have 44 ground-based interceptors. And Senate and House is looking at an additional 14 or 28.
The Trump administration wants to increase spending for missile defense by 15%, but right now interceptors can only shoot down one missile at a time. Catherine Blakely of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments says that's a problem.
What if there's a decoy? What if there are multiple missiles within the incoming missile? And so that's where the increased research funding is largely going.
Some members of Congress want more money for research on a space-based missile defense system, but all of these missile spending plans could violate budget caps on Pentagon spending that the defense budget President Trump proposed had already violated. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
We should check markets. With North Korea tensions, the Dow fell 204 points yesterday, 0.9% to 21,844. With the S&P 500, it was a sharper fall, down 1.5%. NASDAQ down 2.1%, 135 points there. This morning, stock index futures in the U.S. are down again, but not by a lot. The S&P future is down 0.1%. The 100 share index in London is down about 1.1% now. With new demand for bonds, the yield on the 10-year note is down at 2.19%. The U.S. Postal Service wants more leeway to raise the price of stamps. After a review, a 10-year review, regulators at the Postal Regulatory Commission could decide by next month, Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
Federal law prohibits the Postal Service from raising stamp prices more than the rate of inflation. Robert Taub chairs the Postal Regulatory Commission, which could decide to change that.
The financial condition of the Postal Service is a mess.
Taub says USPS can't even meet its mandated expenses, like paying employee health benefits. Kevin Kosar is with free market think tank the R Street Institute.
Since 2008, mail volume has decreased 25%, and the vast, vast majority of the Postal Service's revenues come from moving the mail.
Increasingly, the Postal Service makes money delivering packages for online retailers, and it wants to update its aging fleet of vehicles to do that better, because delivery is a competitive game.
There's always this question, is it going to use profits it derives from the monopoly side to subsidize the competitive parcel side of their business?
Rival UPS says allowing a hike in stamp prices could mean the Postal Service undercutting its private sector competitors. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.